All right, I say we start up.
We have
our leaders here.
I didn't know.
So we've been discussing the halacha of shamayim desadacher that comes up in the Mishnah in the beginning of our 20s.
Wanted to raise two main issues. One of them we introduced already last week, Monday. So the two main issues are, firstly, why is there such a halacha that we're shamayim desadacher? Here we saw, or I tried to sketch two different views. One view is that we're shamayim desadacher because that is considered to be the davar hanizak. That's the true davar hanizak. The second view is that that's not the davar hanizak, but there, or at least we don't know whether it's the davar hanizak. But out of some consideration of fairness, it seems like it would be inappropriate to treat the item itself as determining the amount of damages that are due. So at least since the davar hanizak can be construed in several different ways, we have to find some sort of reasonable equilibrium or some sort of fair midpoint between the extremes in order to assess the value of the nezek. So that's the first issue that's on the table. The second issue that's on the table is what's the scope of application for this idea of shaman ayde sada acher? Is this a limited halacha with respect to produce that grows on fields, or maybe even like unripe produce that's dependent on the field for its sustenance? Or is this a halacha that applies writ large in vegan, that we always want to look for like the broader or the cheaper way of assessing the davar hanizak? So there's a sense in which these two questions are connected. We'll see that they're put together often. But at least for the way I want to present it now, let's treat them as two separate questions. So yesterday we spoke about Rashi on both Kaman and Hay, two different ways of reading of this formulation. I want to point out the Rambam Perish HaMishnayis in Bava Kama Vav Beis. So most of you got a chance to see the Rambam's characterization. So why does the Rambam, what's the Rambam's characterization of Shaman Ayde Sada Acher and Bishishim? What do you take from it? Yes, out there.
Just find some average between the Mazik and Nizak. You don't listen too much.
Yeah, so Kidei L'Matzeh. So do you think the Rambam thinks this is about the item, what's considered to be the Davar HaNizak? Or is this about some external consideration of like a fair valuation? Yeah, it seems like it's some sort of like idea of like a fair valuation for the mazik, right? Isaac, I know you're very adamant that this is about, I mean, Isaac Shulman, I know any of you are very adamant that this is, that in general the halacha can't be about fair valuations for the mazik. So are you at least on board for this reading of the Rambam, or do you think the Aramaic, the Arabic is mistranslated? What's your reading of the Rambam? Well, yeah, so you mean the Rama at least seems to think that it's Kedil Maseya Ben Anizak Lamazik, right? That it's not that this is objectively considered to be the Davar HaNizak.
Is there like some more dimension for like this?
For what?
For this rule, that like, doesn't matter what the framework reference is, but still there's like some sort of like fairness with the
doing. So again, so I think the simplest way of making sense of it is that look, there are several different ways of trying to determine what the davar hanizak is. We're agnostic. We have no, there is no right answer. Right, so it's like contra the Chazon Ish, who thinks that like the Torah provides us like a clear metaphysics for the ontology of things, and then we just apply that rule. But rather, like, no, it's complicated. We can never really know what the davar hanizak is, so we try to establish some sort of fair rule for distributing losses between the mazik and nizak. Well, why is that? Why is that problematic?
It's a good riot this year, but beyond that, I just don't know why it's very
complicated. Why is it a riot this year? All it's saying, this is complicated, right? I mean, it's always going to be an open question as to what the davar hanizak is. Did I destroy the bushel? Did I destroy the fruit? Did I destroy the field? Did I destroy your net worth? And there's no right answer to that. Why is that problematic?
I just don't know why the Torah wouldn't want to take a stand on what the right answer is to
that. Well, maybe because there is no right answer and the Torah doesn't want to get it wrong.
What does it mean there is no right answer?
Anybody want to take a shot explaining this to Isaac?
No, you said Yoshigata was the one.
I mean, what does it mean to me? Is that like you die?
All right, guys, enough. None of this sort of Shigar stuff. None of this Ramos Shitsvi stuff.
Putting
my foot down here. It's getting out of hand already.
It's all the same thing.
Is it that they're here to come off their footsteps?
We're not talking about it.
No,
also, so, Joni, you want to explain? I mean, why does there have to be one right answer as to what the Devar HaNizak is?
If there is nothing dictating to us what the right answer is, then there's the right answer.
It seems like very opposed to the Torah already. Like, since the Torah didn't set up all the right answers, so there's no right answer.
We're not saying since the Torah didn't set up. We're saying that the way to explain this halacha, that this halacha is best explained by the fact that there is no right answer as to what the Devar HaNizak is.
I mean, I'm pretty bothered by it, but I think it's also very problematic to think that there is no right answer, and then also say that something is more fair than something else.
Well, it's fair in the sense that they think this is the Devar HaMemutza. This is the golden mean.
But any way they would have done it would have been fair.
Or not fair.
We're pretty agnostic whether it's fair or not also.
Yeah, I mean, so I think this is consistent with saying that there may have been other fair ways, but this, they, for whatever reason, they determine to be the fairest, or overall gets it right most of the time. You're asking me to motivate the view.
Gets it right most of the time. There's no getting it right.
Gets the fairest way without imposing undue costs on the mazik.
Which seems very arbitrary.
So you have two points now. You have two objections. One of them is the arbitrariness, and the other one is that you think there has to be a right answer as to what the Devar HaNizak is?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, are any of you troubled by that there has to be a Devar HaNizak, like a clearly defined Devar HaNizak? Yeah, I mean, Leah, do you have something to say?
Yes, I agree. What we're talking about is extremely arbitrary. I fundamentally don't understand.
What's arbitrary?
Specifically, well, I mean, I would say, first of all, this compromise position is a little arbitrary.
Okay, that's Isaac's second point. Okay, let's go to his first point.
Well, what was the first point? I mean, the
first point is that there is no, that he thinks there has to be a right answer as to what the Devar HaNizak is. And this has it, like in this Chazanish sense, or like, Torah gives us an ontology of objects, and we just apply that ontology to Nezikin, and we always know what the thing damaged is.
I'm less troubled by that. Yeah. I'm more troubled by the second point.
I knew if I framed it in terms of Chazanish, you wouldn't be troubled by that.
I also don't understand in general, like, the need to ever really be sensitive to the Nazik.
Because he's a bad guy.
He's a Mazda. Like, why do we care? Okay, so we got a bad deal. Don't damage. Especially if
you're saying it's like, oh, he ran over my grass, so let's charge him like $200,000.
No, I mean, you have to have like a fair assessment. This isn't talking about fairness.
Well, how do you know it's not about fairness?
Because if that's what
you were doing, no matter what we did, it would have been fair.
I'd say no matter what. I said there can be several ways of getting a fair outcome. Because this is considered to be the best one.
Yeah, so it's whatever the most extreme one is, as long as it's within that spectrum.
Why is that the most extreme?
Because he's a damager. He damaged. He pays.
Maybe
that's the safest way to go.
Or
minimum. That's the safest way to go. Because the Mazik is the one that harmed the other guy. He's the one that's in the wrong.
Maybe there's like also a motzmei chaver on the rise.
Yeah,
I think this kind of is like a bezim rule.
But it's not discretion based. The whole point here is we're defining exactly how you do shuma, so we always get a middle.
So I think it's still an open question how much this is open to. Like you might say, this halacha is a very narrow rule that only applies to raw produce that's still driving sustenance from the sadeh. And Chazal is saying shamanaga vasada. Maybe yes, this is just a general rule. And if it's clear that this is not the right, this is not the fair application, then you have a different rule. We'll see that in some Akronin. So I think that's going to be the question about how writ large is this principle. Does this apply supposed to be a rule for all of Nezikin, or just like a narrow one for Tavu Agavasada?
I'm confused, like where the starting point is. That we assume that there should be some form of wholesale discount or some form of thing. Like, why wasn't it obvious that we showed it? Why isn't it obvious the starting point of Shuma? Just how much is this thing worth? How much is this thing worth?
So we're going in circles here because the point is that there is no clear object about this thing.
No, I'm fine. I understand that. But the point is that for Rambam, the frame of reference is not an ontological point about what is the object of value. For Rambam, it's just about a way to come up with a convenient assessment.
Given that we don't know what the object is. The reason why we need a fair decision procedure is because we don't know what the Devar HaNizak is. Somebody want to take a stab at...
Well, where you been around? Where is your deal? This is only because we can't have a concrete frame of reference. It's because of the ambiguity of the frame of reference. I don't think Brown says that anywhere. It seems like Brown was purely motivated by the idea of coming up with like a quote-unquote fair compromise for the Mazda and Visa.
Well, where do you come up with the reading of the Rambam that it's already once we know what the Deborah Hanizak is?
I think Rambam doesn't care about what the Deborah Hanizak is, per se.
Did you already establish it previously?
Like, I just don't think that's a relevant question for Rambam. Like, yeah, maybe there are different points of reference. Even if there are, just pick a middle one. The point is, it's just you always pick a middle one.
Rambam just gives us the cliques of the Gemara, where it's eating Tavua from Masada.
Okay, but Rambam doesn't take a stance on, oh, well, is the Tavua the object, or is the Sada the object here? He's completely ambivalent to that question.
Well, this is taking a stance, right?
No, that's the point. It's not. His point is he doesn't have to take a stance, because at the end of the day, he thinks all that matters is the pragmatic point that, well, this is like a fairer amount.
Au contraire. The fact that the Rambam thinks we don't care about the Deborah HaNizak implies that this is precisely because we're agnostic as to what the Deborah HaNizak is. That's why the Rambam doesn't make a big deal. Is it the Tzur or is it the Sada? Something in between, so right? We don't know.
Isn't that what I'm saying? Rambam doesn't care. He's agnostic about what the
Deborah HaNizak is.
Yes. I agree with that point.
So I thought you were saying that Rambam thinks we know what the Deborah HaNizak is, and Afal Pi Kein, he's doing this. That's the position you were defending a second ago.
I see.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I see.
But I'm saying that the whole point is that we don't know whether it's the two or the side. That's why we have the Deborah Hamid.
My point was for Rambam, it doesn't have to be we don't know if it's the two or the side. I mean, Rambam, even if we know for sure it's the Tavua, the fact that...
Well, what do you mean we know for sure it's the Tavua?
That from the halakhic point of view, the way...
Yeah, so I don't see where you get that in the Rambam.
Because he just seems totally, he doesn't care about it at all.
Right, so I'm saying the reason why he doesn't care about it all is precisely because that's not the question.
But you're saying it's not just that's not the question, you're saying it's because he doesn't know the answer. Because we don't know, because there is no answer.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Well, why do you have to assume that?
I don't have to assume that, I'm just trying
I'm
to make the
like
most
it's
sense
just
out of it.
Plausible in the Rambam, even if you think it's clear from general halacha.
Yeah, then why would you have this? Why would you have this Deborah HaNizak?
Because we still want to go to the Mazik, is the point of the Rambam. That is the most important value for the Rambam.
Just because we like Maziks?
Because it's fairness.
Why is that fairness?
I don't know. That's why it's arbitrary.
So you're like this. This is your math. You're saying, look, there are two ways to read the Rambam. One of them leaves this totally unexplained, right? The other way kind of makes sense of this, but since we don't know which way the Rambam's going, we should like choose the explanation that doesn't make sense.
You're making like this weird structural argument. I'm just telling you what makes sense when you read it.
Right. So I don't know who's on board with my reading of the Rambam.
Anybody
sympathetic to Liad? No? Yeah, you're sympathetic to Liad? Yeah, you think there's something in Hilchos Nida that suggests that we should read the Rambam in Liad's way?
It's traditions.
Okay. So, I think the Rambam is... my reading of the Rambam...
There's nothing in the Rambam that supports your view.
What?
There's nothing in the Rambam that supports your view.
Really? Why is there nothing
that I can assume that? Why did you assume that I didn't believe it? There was sort of set value, or like what was the right? It's just like that's not what he's writing about. He's just writing why this is the best way to go about it.
So what's the best way to go about it?
The Matzah means of Matzah, you know, to evaluate based on what we said earlier.
Huh? So let me just press you on that for a second. So suppose you're mazik the desk, and we know objectively that the value is incurred by the desk, not by the building. We know this is worth $100. So you shouldn't pay me $100. You should pay me $80 instead. Why not? Why are you paying me $80? We know that you damaged the desk. We know the desk is $100, and that it's destroyed.
So what's
the answer to that question?
I agree with what I'd say, that you don't know for sure. Like,
forget about the reading of the Ram. Just answer the question. So you know that I destroy a desk that's worth $100. You know that the desk is what suffered the damage.
This is going to be one of his arguments.
Why are you paying me? Why are you paying me? Why are you paying me?
You know that's going to be one of his arguments.
What's the answer to the question?
Well, why are you paying me for that?
Yeah.
So maybe this is the ideal way to evaluate the damage.
Why would it be ideal to evaluate something that's worth $100?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think that is...
So how are you reading this Rambam?
I think
well,
that approach is.
If you're so, I mean, so I want to know. Don't just punt it back to Liad. Tell me how you're reading the Rambam.
No, I think Ditzah who
it makes sense of this Rambam for me. Don't just read the words and don't just point back to Liad. Give me an answer.
Yeah, I'll defer.
Don't defer. Give me an answer. I'm not going to bother you. I'm just giving you one opportunity to read the Rambam coherently.
Isn't this a different case though?
Do you have an answer or not?
So what does that mean?
You tell me.
This is the way to appropriately evaluate how best to compensate.
Yeah, I know what the I know what the words mean.
I don't know why it has to be like that. The Torah didn't think this was the best way to compensate someone.
So it's like Palga Nizka. It's like Palga Nizka or something.
Yeah, I don't know why that's so inconceivable.
So why do you? So every case of Nizikin is Palga Nizka on your
it's
view?
Not Palga Nizka.
Why is every case of Nizikin
not
Palga? What's that?
Why?
So why if we know the damage is suffered on the desk and the desk is worth $100, we know there's $100 worth of damage. Why is the Mazik paying 80?
See, in the system of values, how to compensate someone for damage. This is the way the Torah stands on what's the
why? Why is that the fairest way? Why is it fair?
I think is a plausible way. Like I don't know arbitrarily why like this is. But I'm saying I think it's not that the Torah can figure out what the best way. I take issue with that formulation.
I'm just trying to figure out why you guys think.
The difference is whether or not you think what's going on here is that Rambam is saying well, there's no way to know what the Torah means that is, and therefore it's come with a compromise position, or is Rambam saying we actively want to be sensitive to the Mazik, therefore that's come with this compromise position, therefore we must be agnostic about what the Torah means that is. It's just about it's about what is the real motive, and therefore what's the Mazik from it.
So in order to give the Mazik a discount, we have to like turn a blind eye to like,
exactly.
The facts that
we're I guess so. I wouldn't say as actively like, oh, we know, but we're turning a blind eye, as much as we're agnostic about it. Whereas you're saying it comes from this like.
Is this like feigned? Is it feigned? Is it feigned agnosticism? Is it feigned agnosticism?
Meaning, I'm not taking a stance on whether it's feigned agnosticism. Is there a way to figure out what the Rizak is in some epistemological, object sense? I don't care. It's not so important to me. I'm not getting a PhD in philosophy. What I care more about here is the point that, it seems wrong to clearly motivated.
So there's no philosophy, there's no Torah. It's garnish made garnish.
The thing that Rudy Maseya and he talked about, I think it seems very clear that the motivation is like some form of fairness in terms of compromise.
Yeah, but how do you know that? Well, I don't know what you mean by compromise.
Middle point.
It's not a middle point.
Well, I'm saying it's some sort of fair assessment given a background assumption about agnosticism about the Devar HaNizah.
I don't see in the Rambam where you see that first part.
I agree the Rambam is not explicit about it. We're just trying to see, like, is there a coherent alternative?
Yeah, I'm saying it's a coherent alternative to say that he's motivated by the sense that we don't want to overly deserve.
How is it overly? The point is, given that we know the damage is worth $100, it's not overcharging him to charge him $100. And yet you and Avram want to say, somehow if we don't charge him 80, we're overcharging him.
I mean, first of all, it's not crazy to say that that's overcharging because people don't usually sell things in that thing. They usually sell them for part of the bushels or part of the packages.
But then you're sliding back into my position that we don't know what the true thing is, whether it's the package deal or the not. So I want to know, without coming back into my position, is there a coherent interpretation? That's what I want to know.
So my only issue is that this means like the Torah didn't have a stance. So let's just do, I think like the Torah overall, taking these considerations, really, this is the ideal that you go about it. Not that like the Torah didn't have a way of assessing the appropriate way for someone to pay back. I'm not like how exactly they got to that point that let's say they eat for the
So it's a Paul Ganiska view, right? Torah is saying you do $100 worth of damage, 80 is a fair form of compensation. Is that what you're saying?
Are you trying to say that the Torah like, couldn't figure it out and like therefore like or like this is the Torah that was considering these different values that come to this amount to pay back.
Somebody want to respond to himself there?
I mean I think we could say kind of have like the Grisical formulation, which is the Torah recognizes both these two options in this Gemon as valid options of paying, and for us to focus on one and totally ignore the other, well, that wouldn't be fair to the other guy.
That's similar to the view that I'm saying, right? We're agnostic as to like, which of these is the right way to evaluate it, so we have this Shir HaMemutza thing.
Right, exactly. I'm just taking issue with the same kind of...
The agnosticism.
It's not that the Torah like, doesn't know the answer. The Torah, these are both right answers.
Yeah, so, but between the two of them, which one is the right answer? So it means, my point is that there's no one right answer as to, right. So that's what I mean by the agnosticism. Right? It's not just like, it's not the agnosticism in the sense of, well, it's like, you know, we have no idea how to go about evaluating this, so let's throw it up in the air. No, it's like there are different ways, right? You could look at it in the narrow sense or in the broader sense. And then because there are different ways, we have to figure out a shir hamemutza between those different ways.
Why can't you say that there is one right answer? Let's say it's a higher amount, and the tourist still wants to come.
Yeah, if you want to go for a poly, yeah, if you think there's a, if every case of Nazikin is like a polygoniska.
Yeah, I'm sure like the agreement between the Mazik and Nazika. Mazik thinks he did 4 all of damage, and Nazika thinks he did 6 damage.
No, but then it's already a dispute about what the Devar HaNizak is.
Right, and like they both have legitimacy to their perspective.
But that's my view.
The Torah might have a view on like which one's correct, but like that's not what the Torah wants to like.
I mean, I guess if one of the parties' view is illegitimate, then it seems strange that that should be given halachic force. So that's why I don't see that view as having merit. It only assumes that it must presuppose that both claims are legitimate, and therefore we have to figure out a shir hamutza b'nayim.
I
so the way Avram's arguing is that suppose both the Mazik and Nizak agree that the desk is worth $100. Afal pichein, the tashlumin should be 80. That's Avram's view. And that's Leah's view also in a certain sense.
I'm not sure I've been that strongly. When you look at the Lashon of the Rambam, you see he says that Lafish Ilom and Kamashad Ha'amah Zu Shachlet Zarei Ha'yutan Dam Rubim. It seems like Rambam is saying fundamentally, if you ever evaluate just the actual value of the fruit, it's always going to be too much money.
Well, Dam Rubim is not too much. Dam Rubim means a lot.
It's a lot, okay, but it's clear the connotation of like a lot of money. He's not saying that's going to be the higher end of the valuation. He's saying that's a lot.
And therefore,
it's always going to be a lot to be misguided, to be high of the Mazik and what he owes. So we have to have a lower amount.
Why? Why can't you just charge him the amount? So I'm saying clearly a presupposed. Which line are you reading from?
So it's like a lot of money if we take into account how much it's actually worth. But that means Rakam Shabbat said that it already be Zara Kapsan, Makrat Ham Rakami Shabbat, Kashma Kumana, Amakat, or Mashal, because I have demonstrated Shimus Mahamu. And if you do just the pure difference of the entire thing, this would be very little. The Visha in Arab is a lakona, Mamakat Bella. The Fiat Shah Bashishim. It seems like what I'm saying fundamentally, it's always too much to assess how much is that actual food amount, and how much is that actual food worth. And it's always going to be very, very little to just say, well, how much is this fruit worth relative to your whole crop? So neither of those will be fair to either party. So the only option we have is taking an option.
But that already presupposes that there are two different forms of evaluation.
Yeah, understood, but it's not that we don't have the ability to discern which one of those forms of evaluation or which one of those frames of reference are the right.
So that's what we're disagreeing about.
Yeah, I understand. Right. I'm saying, from
I don't think there's anything in the language. I think this language just says that, well, look, this is one legitimate evaluation, that's a different legitimate evaluation, none of these is more legitimate than the other one, therefore we have a shir hamutza.
When he says, Lepisha in Erev, it's la kona la ama achas ka'elef.
Yeah. What do you think that means?
That's not a statement about what's the epistemologically true frame of reference. He's just saying that's a very little amount of money. It seems purely pragmatically motivated. If you were to just take...
What do you think this line means? I'm just not even sure what this line means.
I think he's saying if you were to take the valuation of the fruit that is eaten relative to the entire crop of the Nizam, it would obviously be too little for us to ever be happy with him getting that amount of money. That's what I'm saying.
Why is it about his happiness? Why are you smuggling in these things, the considerations of happiness? I thought we put Rav Shagar out of the picture.
But what's he mean when he says she'en eret, it's a lakona? There's no value to it. It's
market value.
You think he literally means that there's no value? It seems like he's saying, no, obviously,
he's just saying,
too small.
No, I think he's saying...
like, objectively, too small to sum of money.
Sure, it's one in a thousand. If I'm buying this as a one in a thousand price, right, which is incredible.
Right, that's what he's saying.
A lakona would barely pay anything if two fruits.
Right, he's just explaining, he's fleshing out the Hebdel
Bishnah. But if that's sort of thing reference, why do we care?
Well, he's just fleshing out the second view.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the point is, when he fleshes it out, it's not by saying that...
No, he's saying because a buyer won't pay much less, right, for one less combo when he's buying 1,000. But that doesn't take a substantive stance.
But the point is, his objection isn't that that's not the right frame of reference. It's just that's a small amount of money, you want to get more money. That's very pragmatically motivated.
No, it's not... The way I read this is just that... He's saying there's one legitimate way of evaluating it, which would be very high for the Mazik. There's one way of evaluating it, which would be very low for the Nizak. And so we have to figure out a shir hamutza b'nayim. That's Ram's argument. Now, the way I take that argument is that there are two ways of evaluating it. Neither is more correct than the other one, so we have to have a shir hamutza. That's the agnosticism view, right? That we can't... There's no principled reason to accept one conception of the Devar HaNizak rather than the other, and that's what gives rise to the procedure. Which I take it is different from yours and Avram's view, which is like, oh, we know which one of these is the right way. We know which one of these is the way of assessing the value. But, like, we want the Mazik to go home happy also. That's the difference between our views.
I mean, why can't it just be more, not just the Mazik go home happy, but, like, why is the Mazik subject to, like, this, like, ratio of moral law, like, the quality of the thing he destroyed? Like, if he destroyed some Nizak field that was, like, 7 billion acres, then, like, he did, like, almost no damage to the overall field, but if he did it to, like, the pauper's, like, single bushel, like, it's so subject to, like, the entire value of the destroyed.
Ah, okay, that's an interesting argument. Now we're talking. So go, let's go, flesh it out. maybe we have a third view here, if you could defend that view. Earlier in the year, I mean, you were like, you know, you thought that, like, moral luck was, like, wasn't like, a valid way of looking at
things. Moral luck is some kind, it's still stupid. Moral luck is the term of Schuma.
Okay. It's an interesting view.
That there might be more legitimacy to one of the claims that was destroyed, but if we're going to determine the Mazik's responsibility based on the entire, like, the value of the entire thing he destroyed, so he's so subject to, like, the luck of what his animal happened to be. He destroyed some, like, rich guy's huge property, so he did almost no damage. He destroyed some like, very poor guy's very small property. He basically assumed the entire value of the thing.
You want to have a more uniform way of, evaluating?
Yeah.
But doesn't that really presuppose that the Dabar HaNizak is not the item, the standalone item? Because if it was always the case that the Dabar HaNizak is a standalone item, then you don't have a moral luck issue, because...
Isn't that the view I'm trying to defend, that the Torah can't be agnostic as to what was destroyed? Great, so I'm taking this and saying the Torah has a presupposed view.
That what? It's already Agav Sada Afer in the other way?
Yeah, I guess so.
So you're saying the opposite, but then the Gzeres HaKasev is strange, right? Because the Gzeres HaKasev seems to be telling us that we're not evaluating it based on the Dabar Atzmo, but rather Agav HaSadeh. And it seems like you're saying almost that, like, Agav HaSadeh is what creates the moral luck issues.
Agav HaSadeh means like Agav, like someone else's field, not like this
field. Yeah, I don't know if that's correct. So I think you have to think more about the view. I think there's something interesting there. My objection is that prima facie, I would have thought that there's a concept that the narrow standalone item is the Dabar HaNizak. And that there's a concept is telling us there's another way of evaluating it, and we have to have some sort of...
Doesn't that presuppose that the Dabar HaNizak is a standalone item?
It just says that there's a prima facie supposition that the Dabar HaNizak is the standalone item.
Right, okay.
But the point is that Torah is telling that's not really true. My point is that if this halacha is about the moral luck consideration, then like the inertia of the sugya is pointed in the wrong direction. So yeah, I think you have to figure that out. So you want to?
And you make a lot of sense about this, but not.
What?
I make a lot of sense about this, but not.
Yeah, which seems to be the consideration in a lot of, right? And
right, because really, like, there's never.
But it's only makish. Say it again.
There's never a situation where it's more beneficial for us to the Mazik.
No, your moral luck thing doesn't make sense to Makish to the Mazik.
Why not?
Because given the status quo ante that you would assume it's the standalone item.
No, I'm saying I assume that I was
allowed. Right, I'm saying, but the Gzeres HaKasev then is pointing in the wrong way, right?
Yeah, I'm saying the Makish to the Mazik works out very well. Because like if you were to evaluate it by itself, that's
given, I understand. Given that you were evaluating Agav HaSadeh, you create these moral luck issues.
I'm just saying that when the Gemara says you can't make him pay the value of the Aruba, that would be Makish the Mazik. Right? That's like the ultimate like form of like unfairness to the Mazik is that he actually pays the thing itself that he's destroyed. Like even though like the
How is that consistent with your view?
Because the presupposition is that like, it should just be based on the entire item that he destroyed, the entire field.
Why is that the presupposition?
I don't know, I'm just asserting it.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out like why that assertion is the right way of looking at things, given that the momentum of the sugya is in the opposite direction. So I think I'm saying you have to hammer that out. So you piqued my interest, but you have to motivate it further. Yoni, and then we'll...
I think that just 2 points about what
in terms of...
What's Isaac's first thing? The moral law thing, or the...
Yeah, so the moral law, the thing about, like, well, maybe my animal will have damaged the whole entire property of some really poor guy. You would be punished more than if you damaged a little bit of a really rich guy's field. And also the second point about it being presupposition that you damage the field and not the aruga, in terms of how we view the mazik. So in terms of how people speak, like linguistically, if someone burnt a little area of someone's field, you would say someone burnt part of my field. You wouldn't say someone completely, entirely burnt a 5-foot radius of my field in the northeast corner. I think that people do view their field as one.
You're saying psychologically.
Maybe the fact that that's how people view their property is a factor. And also, secondly, I think that the Chazon Yecheskel brings up the Nafkamina case about whether you do damage someone's whole aruga, if that's all they own.
Yeah.
And he would say that you're shoving al gabe the aruga, not in terms of some
right.
theoretical field. So I think that in that way, it's not really feasible. It's not really, like, you can't really say that halacha views this thing as an unlucky occurrence that you damaged some property.
That's your response. You see what he's saying, Isaac? So,
isn't that about, like,
you're only saying that on the view that...
No.
So he says it's totally on the chakira. Isaac would be going in the other side of the Hakira.
Within the Rambam, we're agnostic about which one is better.
So,
because if we're agnostic about which one is better, then unless we pick the convenient one depending on what case we're going, we have to pick one way to pick.
That's a very good point. So, Leon and Avram, your homework is to try to figure out your view and convince us all of it. I want you to give a good argument for why, given that we know the Dover Hamizak is X and evaluated at X, the Chi of Tashlumin should be something other than what we know to be the true value for. And Isaac, your job is to figure out whether the moral luck thing could explain that sufficiently given the evidence in the sugya. Alright? Just go ahead.
But I'll just do what we did for the sugya of Shabbos and Repoy for this game.
What?
So I'll just do what we did for the sugya of Shabbos and Repoy.
What do we do?
Ignored it.
What do you mean ignored it?
Ignored all the evidence in the Gemara.
I ignored the evidence in the Gemara?
Yeah, we distinguished between Hadebar and Nisgib Mom.
No, we just said that. It's included the different ways of evaluating Nezek explains the difference, no? You can give as elegant an explanation as I gave for Shevis and Repoy, and you've exceeded your natural endowments.
Remember, his family's hosting the Shabbat over this week.
You definitely gonna get $5 from him now.
That's right. You'll see very quickly that it's Myla and Isaac's family if you treat him critically.
True.
Okay. So the Chazon Yecheskel and Bava Kamma in the Tosefta and Perek Vav Halacha Yud. So he just has the cleanest translation of this Chakira. And he's the one who really tries to develop it in a sustained manner. So he says, for example, Hine etzem adin sheshom agav asad acher tzarech limud. Just look at the way he formulates the chakira. Im hu din be'ofen hashuma v'yachas el tashlume hanezek. And you see, this is like the morally fair side of the chakira. Shekidei shelo yafsid hamazik harbe im yashumu davar hanizek levado. Amra Torah sheyashumu agav sada acher. That's one view. O din hu be'etzem hanezek. Hainu sheha-Torah gilsa lanu v'achla peros aruga zu. Ha-hezek misyaches al kol ha-sadeh. V'ha-chefet hanuza hu ha-sadeh v'lo ha-aruga levada. V'lefikach sham mes ha-sadeh kama nifscha nifchisa ide giron ha-peros aruga zu. So you see, these are the two ways of formulating the question. Now, of course, I'll read this first side as saying that given that we don't know what the actual Devar HaNizak is, the Torah has this thing, Kadesh Lo Yafsid HaMazik Harbe. Maybe that's like a Motzmei Chaveiro L'Rei consideration. Maybe it's distinct. And the second side is saying the Torah is telling us a Chiddush as to what the true Devar HaNizak actually is. Okay. So so you might say conceptually, one nafkamina between the tzaddim is that on the first view, again, we don't take a stance on what the true Dabar HaNizak is. We know that the Tashlumin is some sort of Dabar HaMutza, some sort of compromise between two ways of evaluating the Dabar HaNizak, or two ways of conceiving of the Dabar HaNizak. But the last view, the Torah is telling us a Kiddush about what the true Dabar HaNizak is, i.e. the Sada, not the Aruga. Now, Chazon Yecheskel tries to bring a raya from the Gemara of Zayin Amid Aleph, that the that's like the second sad. So he says, "Inei me'asuk is like Gemara Mem Zayin, v'ashma ketzada achon shel chakirazu." So what's the raya from Mem Zayin Amid Aleph? What's the proof? How does this show that Torah is telling us a chiddush about the Dabar HaNizak? So he says, "Well, look at Gemara's answer." Gemara says, "Idina hu lichash mazik mishum damar leparama avrata azikcha azikaska para." Ma'avrasa shaymana lacha. So what's the riot here? Selter.
Mazik's basically saying, and then the question of the Gemara there is, why do we care about the Mazik? If it's mitadin, you should pay the
right. Why is it getting a discount, right?
Because the Mazik can say, listen, I damaged your pregnant cow. The Dabar HaNizak is the agav, the whole picture.
Yeah.
It's not something to pay you.
Good. So is this a good riot? Is this a bad riot?
Really, he is assuming that the first out of the the Dabar HaNizak was the Aruga by itself, and still we don't want to force it.
I don't know why you think that.
But otherwise, it's not a riot at all.
Well, it's not a riot at all anyway.
No, it is a riot at all if you make that assumption.
Yeah,
of course, because if the point is that the thing that was damaged was the Aruga, and still we don't want to cause the loss, we don't want to cause the Mazda to lose too much money, so that's a direct stira to the Gemara Mem Zayin, where the Gemara says, Ikina hu lichash.
Why? Gemara's just saying.
Gemara Mem Zayin is assuming that if the thing that's destroyed is the fetus by itself,
no, the Gemara
cares that it's a higher evaluation.
That's not what Gemara says. Do you see Gemara Mem Zayin?
Yeah.
So what does Gemara say?
Gemara says if it's proper to cause it to hold them more accountable for the fetus independently,
yeah,
we should do that.
Right. So no, if he owes the amount of the fetus by itself, so why are we trying to give him a discount?
Right?
So what's the riot there?
He thinks that's a direct theory of the first out of the Hakira. Clearly assuming that the first out of the Hakira.
That's not what he thinks the riot is. He thinks the riot comes from the Gemara's answer to that. I mean, the Gemara's answer is that it's not giving the Mazik a discount because the Mazik can say, I didn't harm a fetus, I harmed a pregnant cow.
If it were the case that the Nazak were the fetus itself, clearly, once we are able to determine what the item of Nazak is, of course we hold him accountable completely for that. In opposition to the first side of Sakira, that's not the case.
No, the Gemara is saying, why doesn't he pay for the value of the fetus? Right? The Gemara says, oh, because then he'd be paying too much.
Yeah. Did you see the Gemara
then? Yeah. So the Gemara then says, well, if he's supposed to pay that amount, then why are we worried about losing the Mazik? Right? Meaning, let him incur that loss.
How do you read the line? Do you have a Dina that has a Mesiach as a Vlad?
Right. If he owes the amount of the Vlad,
the Nezek is related to the blood.
Right. Then, in principle, that's how much he owes. Right? And so...
That doesn't take a stance on your way of framing that.
This is not the riot. This is the riot is the answer. El mishum da'amar le'par ma'avrasa azikna par ma'avrasa shaman alecha. Kilomar ha'para, I guess this should be he, Sheni Zuka, Zahezek Mesiachi Selah. Bulachin, Shamu Levlad, Agav Para. Right? He's saying, you see from the Gemara's answer that the reason why the Mazik gets a discount is because he can say, Para Mavrasa Mazikna. That the whole point of the din is to show that the pregnant cow is the object of the damage. That's the riot that he's bringing. Not from the.
How would that arrive? Because it's saying that there's two.
Good.
Right.
Sorry,
good.
Throw your hands
it's very difficult, right?
Throw your hands up in the air. I have a very compelling explanation.
It's it's a very problematic riot because
your homework will be to come to give us a coherent explanation for how this is a riot.
So 1 second. I'll tell you why I think it's not a good riot.
I think it's not a good riot? I think it's not a good riot if the Hakira is there some agnosticism going on, but we want to
why is it not a good riot even on this view right now?
On which view? On my view?
No, why do you think it's not a good riot?
Because he hasn't why would it be a riot? I mean why does it come down on the question of are we trying to determine what the Dabar HaNizak is, or are we agnostic to it but we still come to some sort of compromise ground?
Mm-hmm. Jonah.
I mean, I think this could be a good riot because what we're saying is like the Nizak saying like, or slash really the Gemara is saying like, okay, this is how we evaluate Nezek, so like that's
right.
What you should be thinking.
Yeah,
of.
This
and then
one
he says it's a completely fair way to evaluate anything otherwise.
Right.
That's what he's responding to.
The Gemara connects this. The Gemara connects this to the Brin of Shaman Ayde Sada Acher. So the Gemara generalizes this to the Yad Eved Agav Eved. The Gemara generalizes this to Mazik Ayde Sada Acher. So it's not just like an exceptional case. The reason why I think this is not a good riot is different from whatever I think the reason that you seem to have. Why do I think it's not a good riot?
We say the Gamash Balan is, doesn't it? Like, we could say the half green is, Deborah Nizak is for Balan. Gamash Balan, that even though the Deborah Nizak is for Balan, we're still going to.
And why? What's the language of the Gemara? It's just the Taina of the Mazik.
It's the Taina of the Mazik. It's not that
yeah.
It's actually the Nizak.
Yeah, that's why I think it's a horrible riot. The Gemara, his riot is from the fact that the Gemara ends up saying, so the Havamina is that this is not the amount of the Dabar HaNisa. And then the Gemara says, the Mazik can say that it is. Mm. And he's making the inference from the fact that the Gemara accepts the fact, the claim that the Mazik can say that it is, and therefore it's the right amount, to the conclusion that, therefore, this is the Dabar HaNisa. But you might say, all the Gemara establishes is that the Tainas HaMazik is sufficient to determine how much he should pay, even though we're agnostic as to what exactly the Dabar HaNizak is.
Do you think his question with Hakira, that he was asking, the first out of Hakira was some sort of agnostic view about all the damage?
Well, look at the way, he doesn't take a stance exactly on how the Hakira works.
Right, but
he just says, is this about Kadesha Loyafsid HaMazik Harbe? Or is it about Etzem HaNezek? That's his Hakira. Right? I think you were right that there are two ways of precisifying the first side of its Hakira. In the way that I explain it. And then there's the other theory that's out there. And I have my issue with the other theory. But he's not taking a specific stand on this.
I mean, he is. From the fact that he thinks that's right.
So,
how about it's just an idiot?
Chatzko?
No, I'm not. I'm rejecting your reading of the thing.
So how do you read this?
I think he thinks that the Hakira is what.
Okay, before we get here, does everybody see the way the back and forth here? The
no.
What?
Can you if you could explain again what the riot is and why you disagree with why the riot?
No,
the
Seltzer's gonna tell you. He's gonna I got a little Seltzer.
Sure.
Right,
so we presented the Hakira and we're talking about Etzem HaNezek, are you actually damaged the field? Or are we saying this is just some way to Sahar Pashas Mazik? Brings the Raya Mem Zayin, which says that the Mazik is going to pay for the amount of the Vlad, only Agav the Para, not for the Vlad itself, because we're worried about Hashat Mazik. The Gemara asks, if the Nezik is actually in the Vlad, so he should pay for the Vlad itself, not just Agav the Para. So the Gemara answers that because the Mazik is going to say, no, really, I damaged. Seemingly, the Dabar HaNizak is the pregnant cow and not the vlad, so I'm going to pay the amount for the pregnant cow. It means I'm going to do the vlad agav the cow. So, Chazak Chazak will say, you see from here the conclusion of the Gemara that the Dabar HaNizak, as we conclude, is the pregnant cow itself and not the vlad. We're saying, no, perhaps we're not from the Havim to the Maskana, we're not saying, we originally thought the Dabar HaNizak was the vlad, and now we're saying the Dabar HaNizak is the cow. Perhaps we're saying, no, but yes, Dabar HaNizak is still the Vlad. It's just this, the claim of the Mazik that I damaged the pregnant cow is enough to say that we're going to, even though Dabar HaNizak is the Vlad, we're going to compromise and say.
Or that it's just a machlokas between the Mazik and the Nizak, what the Dabar HaNizak is. And it would be unfair to only accept the Nizak's interpretation of it and not the Mazik's. So it's out of, it's just, meaning the Maskan of the Gemara could be, yes, we're agnostic as what the Devar HaNizak is, just we also have to be acceptable to the Mazik's interpretation of it. So I don't see how this is a raya to, clearly, I mean, what's going on in the Chazon Yecheskel, like, I think it's not an absurd read of the Gemara. He's just saying that, look, when sometimes the Gemara presents arguments from the voice of the Tainas HaMazik when the Gemara is siding with him. That's, I guess, how he'll read the Gemara. I'm saying, no, in this case, it's presented as an argument to the Mazik, because that's all it is. But how are you reading? You seem to have a different reading of the Raya here.
Yeah, I think it's Spakura is different. I think it's Spakura is whether we say that the Devar HaNizak is the Aruga, but we still don't want to compensate the Mazik so much, or that we're trying to determine what the Devar HaNizak is. And so this Gemara that makes the point over here is clearly assuming that all we care about is what the Devar HaNizak is. Once we determine that the Devar HaNizak so we can no longer have a considered who is there.
But it's still not a good
right. Once we have the consideration of the Devar HaNizak is the Aruga, so first it should be Matish the Mazik. The Gemara says, no, it's not. That's not true.
Great.
It's Paramahaprasa.
So what's the...
Meaning, the proof is from that line. Right, Matish? I have a Dina Shah has a Mishakis of lives. If it were the case that the Nezek were simply the fetus itself, Hayashonos HaNezek Vabashay Amar Velosek Mazik.
Right.
Then the halacha should have been very clear that we're Mazik to Mazik. Again, for the first time, just like Hira, that the whole question is, given that there's some sort of objective evaluation of the Devar HaNizak, we still have this question, we still have this consideration of not being Mazik to Mazik too much.
So you're saying, Iyav Adina Shehezek Mesiachis El Vlad, Hayishamanis HaNezek. So you're saying that the Raya comes from the fact that the Gemara seems to turn on whether the Devar HaNizak is the Vlad or the mother?
Yeah.
But couldn't the first side of the Chakira read that Gemara that way also? And say, yeah, the debate is whether
this whole point of the first side of the day, the first side of the Chakira is that regardless of what the Devar HaNizak is, we can't hold the Mazik to account.
So again, remember, he's not interpreting the first side of the Chakira in any fine-grained way. His first side of the Chakira is stated very generally, just that it's like some sort of consideration of fairness.
Right.
But couldn't you read even this Havamina Maskana in terms of consideration of fairness? The Havamina is that the Devar HaNizak is the... If the Devar HaNizak is the Vlad, then we're Shamanas the Vlad. Right?
Yeah. Okay, that wouldn't be fair.
But then given that we don't know what the Devar HaNizak is, we're shaman, we have to have some sort of procedure.
Point, right? That question of the Gemara is, against this first stuff. Like, the first consideration is that it doesn't matter what the Devar HaNizak is. We shouldn't be Masa Demazi too much.
No, so suppose, take my view of the first side, which is that it's when we're uncertain as to what the Devar HaNizak is, then there has to be this procedure, right? So yes, that first side is consistent with cases where we know exactly what it is that you pay that amount. There has to be two different legitimate ways of evaluating it or conceiving of it in order to apply the din of the Shir HaMemutza. And that's perfectly consistent with this Havamina here, that if it's Dina Shehezek Nesiachet Sala Vlad, Hayishamen Es HaNezek Vlad. And the answer is, well, we don't know.
I don't get it. Are you being arguing against my reading, or are you saying that your reading can work?
I'm saying that there's nothing in the Chazon Yecheskel here that...
I mean, I wouldn't agree with that.
I'm saying the Raya is not coming from here, because this part is also perfectly consistent with the... This part is certainly not taking a stand on the Chakira. If anything, the riot comes from the second part, and that's my whole guess about how to.
I don't think so. But also, I mean, in addition to the fact that I don't think it would make any sense to try to bring a riot in Kamara if the Fakir was as understood it. I think it's pretty clear from the way he sets up the Fakir. Right?
Well, even the way I understand it, I mean, his riot is not crazy. I think it's a decent riot. It's just not mukhrach, because you could say the taina samazik is just a taina.
Either way, I think the way he sets up the question is that, like, should we do the Shuma based on the Devar HaNizak itself or not? I mean, there is some sort of stance on what the Devar HaNizak is, but there's still some consideration that we don't do the Shuma based on the Devar HaNizak.
Where? Which part?
He sets up the question. He said, Emu din b'ofan ha-shuma b'yachas b'shal me'ah ha-nezek, shekidei shal yachse ha-ma'at ha-kardei, kim yashimu Devar HaNizak l'vadu. If we were just to evaluate Devar HaNizak by itself, it would cause a big loss to the ma'at.
Well, I think Davar HaNizak is meant like, obviously, he means some like the closest thing.
It's kind of like a weird, confusing sentence, right?
Yeah. I think it's an interesting point you're making. I just think that this is like, you can understand what he's saying here, right? Like, literally the closest, the narrowest defined object as the. I mean, I would say, like, levado is, like, the real modifier there. So. All right. So the Chazon Yechezkel points out a few potential nafkamina here. He says, he points out one important thing here. He says, so he has the riot at the Gemara. Obviously, the Gemara Mem Zayin generalizes to Chavala and to Mazik Avdo. This is the general principle. And then he makes a notorious qualification based off the Gemara on test, that's this section, that when you have a davar chashuv, so like certain kinds of dekalim, that even though they grow and nurture from the sada, they're chashuv bifnei atzman, we're not going to be shamin agava sada. Right? Aval ba'achla peros shel dekel parshin shel tmar shel yafos misharan adekel bifnei atzmo kama hayashava v'kama mishava ata. The Eino Nisam Agav Asada, Shebi Yoso Davar Chashuv, Eino Bata El Hasada Elios Kechelek Mimenu, Vaha Hezek Mitzyachis El Adekel Atzma. Now this is an important exception that comes up in the Gemara in Hakones. So I think what he's trying to say here is that, and what do you think he's trying to say here? I think he's trying to say that it's got to be plausible to view the thing as an extension of the sada. But if it's not plausible, then clearly the Xerxes Kosovo Ideh Davar Acher won't apply, right? Because the thing itself is so distinct. Yoni.
Does that apply also if you have a full field of this very chashuv eitz?
Interesting. So, like, it would seem like it, right? It would seem like if let's say you have an esrog field or something, maybe, and each esrog is very special, then you wouldn't really evaluate it agav the sada either.
That's like the Rubin and Tom
Yeah, how chashuv is this?
Yeah, exactly.
If it's chashuv by itself, then we're not going to have this procedure of agav asada. I think this implies that it's maybe it's more about trying to figure out. So you can say one or two things here. Maybe this shows that it's all about trying to figure out the object of nezek, and if the davar hanizak is chashuv if neatzmo, then just like we're ontologically blocked from merging it with its background sada. Or the idea is that look, in considerations of fairness. Like, the fairness doesn't apply when it's so clear what the Devar HaNizak is. Right? That's the... I mean, both of them boil down to the fact that, like, in this case, it's clear the Devar HaNizak is individuated based off its own chashivas. Right? I guess, like, maybe Liad and Avram will have to say something. Well, why is this an exception, right? Why is the mere fact that it's Devar HaChashiv... Why is that an exception to the rule that we always want to give the Nizak a discount for, you know, Pshara reasons or reasons of making him happy? Right? If it boils down, if it's, on the other hand, it's about, well, how connected is this to the Sada? Either because usually it is part of the Sada, in this case it's not, or in my sense, that usually we don't know, and here we do know, I think it makes more sense. So he throws out a few nafkamino. We bein shnei atzadim shel chakir azu yesh nafkus odina. Heicha shapeiros lechad v'asad la'acher. So this is a very interesting nafkamina. So suppose one person owns the real property, the land, and another person owns the fruits. So it's like leased out. So he thinks that that's a nafkamina. So how do you think that nafkamina goes?
Not agav karka.
What?
Not agav karka. I think that's what it's in the implication of what he said.
So which, according to which side would you be? Would you pay specifically for the peiros?
For the second one, if that's a manazak, then it's just the peiros.
Yeah. Peiros. Right. But he thinks that if it's like some sort of consideration of fairness for the mazik,
then you do it according to the feel.
Right.
Because we don't care.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting idea, right? It's like why on the first side that we're motivated by, we're not sure what the Devar HaNizak is. So I think this, obviously, to explain this, we have to say that this shows that we're starting with the Mazik's point of view. Because obviously if it's about the Nizak's loss, then even on the first side, it's pretty clear that Nizak only lost Peros. Right? But it is kind of a curious nafkamina. The second nafkamina that he gives is Hecha She'en Le Nizak Ela Aruga Zu Levad.
It's made less curious in my reading.
What?
Made less curious in my reading.
The moral luck thing?
No, just that the first side of Akira is that given that he destroyed Peros, he still don't want to make him pay Peros. So that's great
nafkamina
for this one.
Yeah, no, nafkamina for sure. The more, well, so you don't have to go to your view, right? So you could even in my view, the point is that it's still an open question. So the loss is borne by two people, right? The loss is borne by the joint ownership of the payros holder and the sadeh holder. Right. The point is that when evaluating Nezek, it's not individuated by who has title, it's individuated by the thing that sustained Nezek, and that's still an open question. So I'm saying what this, on the first side, what this shows is that we're not just beginning with the Nezek's loss. Right? Even if the Nezek's loss is a subset of the Devar HaNizak, we'll still evaluate it based off like the object, not the title holder. It raises an interesting question why you might do that. Yoni.
I think that this, the nafkamina about two owners brings up a question about what exactly connects the pair up to the field. And I think that an assumption that he had was that it has to be batal to the field in some way. I'm wondering what changes when you have two different owners. So what exactly would he say for that? Why should it change that you wouldn't go agave sada if there are two owners? I
mean, for which side? For the first side or the second side?
For the side that's the guf hanezek.
So I think that's right. I think he thinks that if it's the guf hanezek, then the two owners would not make a difference.
Oh, but... Uh-huh, but the guy who's worried about the hafash of the mazik would say that you're shoving based on the peros value.
And
theoretically, they should both agree that you're shoving al-gabe sada. I don't see what would be the difference between two owners and one owner.
You didn't damage for the nizak, you didn't damage his field. There's no field. There's no field.
What do you mean? The guy who owns the field is the Nizak.
No.
Yes.
The person who owns the peiros.
No, the peiros are batal to the field.
What? That's not what the case is.
That was his understanding of why the peiros could be part of the field. Why it is that when you damage, what's the difference between this case and that case?
Because what the Nizak actually owns.
No, but the Nizak is the owner of the field. Because the whole point is that the fruits are bottled to the field. So by virtue of him being on
right.
the field, he's
saying meaning
damaged.
If it's just a din in evaluating the nezek, he thinks that you're going to be blocked by ownership. As in Ain Len Nizak Ela Ruga Zulavad, as a Ruga Zubadabra Nizak, right? And the Akas and Hezekos Tadish Ain Rishal Nizak.
Right. You're paying the owner of the Aruga just with my Aruga. I think Aruga's question relates to, do you also owe something to the Baal HaSadeh? Because by damaging the fruits...
Right. You're somehow...
You may also be damaging the field as a whole.
Right.
So you have to pay him anything.
Right. Sounds like he thinks not. Yeah. Right. Sounds like he thinks not.
Well, yeah,
like the Nezek is just sustained by the payros.
It wouldn't be enough, I mean, if you paid the Baal HaSadeh anything.
Correct.
So he must think that for the second side you're only paying the for the fruits, but... I don't see how the owner of the fruit is the Nizak here, according to his idea of being levatel to the field. Because it shouldn't matter if you own the field or not. It's levatel to the field.
So he thinks that, but he thinks that you're not going to say it's levatel to the field across different owners.
Right.
Right.
That's what he's saying. I'm wondering how that...
Because it can't be interpreted as the Nizak. So I guess... Donnie, so you're saying that the owner of the field is not sustaining any loss.
Yeah, well,
right?
Again, like,
they came in and munched some fruits.
Yeah.
Right, that were growing. So there's no loss to the owner of the field.
Yeah, but why can't you say that
the
same? Then you have to say that Svara also, if the person owns the field and the fruits. What did you damage? You damaged some fruits?
Well, because you have that ability to go to the field. You don't have that ability when they're... It's almost like in the conception of the Nizak's loss, there's no field.
Yeah, but doesn't that beg the question? Why is it the conception of the Nizak's loss... as opposed to just like, what was damaged? And so if there's a rule that the object of damage is the field with the fruits, then the right answer is to say that two people split some sort of damages because the combined entity of the payrolls holder and the field holder will now get less were they to sell together. Understand? So
is that how that deal is made?
Right. So that's what he's saying. He's saying clearly the deal is not going to be made that way. It's
yeah.
it's all relative to Nizaks.
Yeah.
So that's my.
So it's a Dabra HaNizak relative to a Nizak. All right. That's kind of the scheme that he has in mind. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate that how forced it is of here, but I think both your points are correct. That this is certainly not mukach at all. All right. It's certainly not mukach that you would relativize it to a Nizak. Right.
So.
Okay. So there are a few other important points here. So the Tosfos Talmud Rabbeinu Tam on Mem Zayin has a chiddush that this halacha only applies to peiros. It does not apply to mazik guf hasadeh, guf hakarka. So what do you think is going on here? Why would the din of Shamanai de Sada Acher apply only to Peros HaSada and not to someone who's Chofer Boros or is Mazik to Gufa Karka? Kind of a strange view, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, somehow saying for Peros, the Devaran Hezek is the Sada, but for Karka, the Devaran Hezek, it's a very localized Hezek. It's not.
Yeah, he's saying that, right?
Yeah, generally, yeah, because we have other areas in Allah where we say that.
Sadna
Dara
Chadu, like
you
were saying the other day, for Kenyan Chazaka or something. Yeah. So I think the best way to try to understand that is just to think that he's thinking of like, this must be where you like clearly sell payros in bulk. Right? So you're dealing with like a farmer or something, and you know he has arugos and he sells the arugos in bulk, and so we're shaman. The aruga, or some of the aruga, agavasade, like the units that you normally sell in or something. But like the karka, like each place is like its own, there's no reason to view a karka as an entire thing. So if that's what's underlying his view, so then it really seems like this principle is relativized. You're trying to find the most narrowly tailored or most appropriate chefza shel nizak. And so, on the empirical assumption, which I'm reading in here, that, well, yes, like, payros are sold together as, like, agricultural produce, then that's why we're shamanim agav hasadeh, right? You don't sell individual apples. You sell per acre or something. But since you're not selling the karka, so then the karka itself is evaluated each karka b'fnei asma. So if that's what's going on here, then this halacha is really, it's like a third interpretation of the main halacha. Right, it's not like the Torah is telling you that Dabra HaNizak is Agav HaSadeh. You're kind of looking empirically to see which is the most narrowly tailored or the most appropriate davar hanizak given how the commodity is being bundled. So I know it's like a very empirical or like a very, it's kind of an okimta reading of this Tosfos Tanna Rabbeinu Tam. I think that's the best way of making sense of it, unless somebody has an alternative read. Yeah,
I don't know, I'm just saying that it might change on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, that's what I'm envisioning. Unless you think
even,
it's like...
Even within payroll, as in my field, I might sell my fruit on an individual basis, and therefore...
Right, I could see some sort of low plugs, but I could also see it going the other way and saying... Because in what sense are like payros aruga zu, like shaiti, payros aruga lasadekula? Like in what sense are payros like more ontologically connected to the whole field? So if you're conceiving it in terms of like, yeah, this is my produce for the year or something, then you bundle it that way. That's the, I know it's a very much like an ukimta. But unless you have some better explanation like why payros are connected yet karka is not connected. Especially given your question from Sadna Darachadu. Don, you have a good reading, or no? You see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Trying to explain this?
I think so.
Leah, do you have a better explanation for this?
No, I don't think so.
Ben, you have an explanation? No. Okay, so Rav Moshe also quotes Rabbeinu Hananel, thinking that, oh, and of course, I should point out that Tos Tam Rabbeinu Tam is explicit based off the Gemara's later on. That if they're payros gemurim, then the lo shayke the gabe asadei kedushin damu. Right? If they're mature payros, then it doesn't make sense at all to be the magav asadei.
Right. Interesting that I think he views the chafirot as payros gemurim.
What's that?
He says that the chafirot and the karka are not shayke batar asadei kula. Baha bidami lo ochel payros gemurim baruga. Somehow they're similar. Is that just the result that you don't do agav asadei, or? Actually, similar in nature somehow to the
period
of murder. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's saying, the individuation of karka is like Heros Gemurin, in that, like, karka is not dependent on karka.
What does that mean?
Well, the idea is that, like, karka is not yonic from karka. So, there's no reason to lump it all together into a single entity. You can individuate karka however you want. But like payros, which are yonic from karka, so it makes sense to view them as like part of the whole karka. It's very logically difficult because if each karka is independent, then each payros is yonic from its own karka.
Right. But you were saying before that perhaps we're clumping.
Yeah, they're just bundle
all the
units.
Together because
yeah.
They're sold together, but payros more if they're still attached, if they're just not being yonic because they're fully ripe, doesn't it? It would still be sold in bulk, I presume.
Payros more.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, why wouldn't you say the same thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, according to your start report.
Yeah. I was saying a phenomenon. I would say that, well, maybe there's some empirical assumption here that, you know, you sell, like, the produce of your land while it's still there or something, and, like, you kind of sell that off. It's leased out. But, yeah, if you were to sell the payros gemurim, like, individually, like, so if you package the payros gemurim in, like, a box or something, then arguably that would be a single unit. It is. It's against the chasnish that we saw on Monday, though. He thought, remember, if he eats, like, seeds from a sack, each seed is a chiyuv of nasma. But otherwise, I mean, that's my best shot at making sense of this. Unless you think it has to do with, like, the ontology of payros, but even then it doesn't make sense, because given that each karka is karka of nasma, so then why wouldn't the payros that are yoni, like, individual pieces of karka, be considered their own entity? So I think there's got to be some just general assumption about how these things are packaged and used. And maybe I would in a hanami in the case of Eretz Gemurim if they're sold as a unit or something. Which makes sense, right? You go to a grocery store and, you know, you buy a bag of apples, so the nezek is sustained by the bag of apples, not like the individual apple inside it. I think that's the picture.
Would this be subjective to like how the society, like let's say, like, I don't know, the economy completely changes?
Yeah, that's my sense within. So I don't know if the whole sugya. I think that's certainly.
But I'm saying this because it seems pretty relative, right? Like maybe that's like what if like everybody sells pretty differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Suppose karka is also bundled.
Yeah.
Together,
like
right?
Say everyone, it's like a homestead. Like everyone gets a
100 acres. Yeah, that's my sense. It's like that's we're trying to figure out like the most relevant quantity or unit. And the chiddush here is that when it comes to affairs inside, they're like, this is the most relevant unit. That's my. I agree. It's in Mekimta, but Jonah.
Also, we never brought this up, but is it a possibility that part of what makes it, let's say, the Christian magic is the fact that it's future value but not current, like, meaning as opposed to it being ripened, therefore meaning it's like, okay, well, you're assuming, but like, what if an act of God comes, right? Meaning, what if the Sada is obliterated later on, and, you know, it just happens to be that I damaged it, you know, 5 days before there was a hailstorm.
So good, and therefore what?
And therefore, meaning that's possibly why it's unfair to hold the Mazik's evaluation over the Nizak's.
Yeah, good. So Jonah's saying, maybe there's even like a third factor that goes into this. That's like the relative worth of its future value to its present value. And so when stuff is still growing in the field, right, it hasn't reached its maturity yet, and so there's a reason why we evaluated Agav HaSadeh, because it doesn't yet have individual worth, like market worth almost, right? So that's like consistent with what I'm saying, that no one bundles. So there's like a way to bundle together raw peiros,
right,
that are still yonik min hakarka. That has to be Agav HaSadeh,
right,
in units, but once things are like have markets on their own,
right,
then you could treat them as individual entities. Yeah, we'll see something close to that later on. That like Agav HaSadeh is related to the future value versus the present value of the produce.
So after they benefit from the Nisa.
Well,
benefit.
In some cases. Yeah, in some cases it's a benefit for the Nisa.
Set up as a benefit for the Nisa,
because that's true now. Yeah, in some cases. But that's consistent with saying that look, we're looking here for like the most correct way of bundling of conceiving of the Debra Nisa. And many considerations will go into that. A, just how is this normally sold? And like B, maybe this factor as to why it's normally sold is it because it's like a raw commodity, which is only sold like in its relation to the Sada or whatever. Because it hedges about whether it'll fully mature or not. No. So let me go over a few more minutes. So the Igros Moshe has a very strong formulation of Shema Rach. I couldn't find this Rach. Shumi Tam Shanech Shabakarga Imazroim Davarazai. Right, that just like the Sada with the Zorayim are considered a single entity. So this is like very clearly like the second side of the Chakira, right, against like the Rambam view. Right, it's like the reason why we're Dam Shamanai Davar Acher is because it's like a single thing. Not that like we don't know what it is, and we're trying to figure out the Shir HaMuzah. Two important related haros. So the question is that if we view this, and this is an important nafkamina, so if we view the Davar HaNisa as part of the Sada, so it's possible that the Mazik can recoup some gains or some benefits that he confers upon the Nisa. So the Gemara talks about this in the Rishonim are more explicit. When I damage your peiros, or I destroy some of your peiros, so the Sada benefits, because it has like a fallow value, like the Sada is working less, doesn't have to produce as many fruits. So that has like some value. So if the Nezek is done to the Sada in a true sense, it's possible that you have to look at the net damage to the Sada, right? Meaning, so there's a loss in terms of lost produce, but there's a gain in terms of the fallow value that the Sada now picks up. So it seems like if the true Davar HaNizak is the Sada, then it makes sense that the Mazik can recoup that, the value of the benefit conferred. Right?
Well, I can't get it back anyway. Why wouldn't it be like Yoritz
of Sada Shechaver Mashbicho?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you might be able to recover under that kind of thing, but you might say, well, here it's just like such an incidental byproduct. So Yoreh usually has to have, it's the less of the expenditure or the gains. And insofar as there's no expenditure, so there's nothing to recoup.
Right? Expenditure, the value of the grapes?
No, Hotzos that he has.
Yeah.
You're saying it's his Tashlumen?
Yeah, that's his Hotzos.
Yeah? I don't know. It's interesting theory. You might say that's not the Hotzos. You might say that's just like a separate Chiyuv Tashlumin. maybe it depends on like the what, how you conceive of Tashlumin in the Reb Chaim sense. But yeah, I hear where you're coming from. So it's machlokas. So the Gemara talks about kachash rufna, whether it's recoverable. L'nachos Mashi calls l'nachos mina tashlumin Mashi yakchishu ha'anavim de'gifanin and yamdu sham ha'rabatzir she'tamid yomkin lichluch ha'gefen. And the Torah quotes machlokas rishonim. All right, don't have a rush kasav. She'adayin pochsin mizeh she'shamin kama hirviya chanizak she'lo hukchach sadei v'mashlo nishar abah ha'peros asher nigmaru. B'kchim menachim l'mazek. So the Torah says, look, not only does the Agav HaSadeh give the Mazik a discount in terms of, like, it's a lower amount he has to pay, right? Because the Nezek to the Peros obviously is worth more than, is a higher amount than the overall Nezek to the Sadeh, but he could also recover the Kechesh Kufana. And the Ramah disagreed, but Ramah calls that Shehim Menachem also. So you might say that this depends in part on whether we really think that the Davar HaNizak is the Sada itself. If that's considered to be the Davar HaNizak, then of course it makes sense that the Mazik should recover the Kechesh, because the field, it turns out, actually sustained less damage. If you think the true Davar HaNizak is just the Peros, and we're Shamin Agav HaSada for some considerations of, like, you know, oh, it's a shir hamimutza, we're trying to figure out what the davar hanizak is, then it may be the case that the nizak, that the mazik does not recover the full value of the kachesh. Because that only makes sense if the sada itself is considered to be the davar hanizak. Right, so how much did it actually depreciate? Well, less the amount of fallow value that it gained. So I think it's like an interesting nafkamina, whether we truly think that the sada is the object of nezek or not. And that's machlokas between the Rosh and the Ramah in Siman Shin Sadi Dalet.
I think this is not exactly related exactly to this, but the case that we had before that the Geffen made it into Yain, but I wanted it to be
the Ramah Mirmigash case.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't this have an effect on it on that case, because then there you're actually making more profit for the...
Yeah, that was a complicated, right? That was a complicated. We're trying to figure out exactly how that case worked.
Yeah.
Right.
So we just didn't know the
differences. Yeah, we gave some explanations here,
yeah,
but.
But so I'm saying, did we give that explanation? Because
it was up to, it was given to the Nizak's
discretion. Yeah. The thing is,
maybe here you should have discretion also to say whether, look, I'd rather have, rather the payrolls.
Why can you say, well, the Nizak, the Mazik has the right to recoup, like, everything? He'd actually get paid at that point because he's making more money for
the Mazik.
Yeah.
Right, like, I'll sell it and I'll just give you the, about the...
Yeah, because I...
And a phenomenon, that might be the case.
It might be, okay.
Yeah, but the Chiddush is that the Nizak can demand that the Mazik sell it, and then take compensation.
Okay.
As opposed to the Mazik being able to say, I don't want the tircha, you just take the wine and we'll call it even.
Got it. Okay.
So, you're right, in terms of value, there may not be, in value, it may be a gain for the Mazik, but in terms of preferences, it may be the case that the Nizak would prefer that you go ahead and have a tircha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back to the Torah about the fallow land.
Yeah, the fallow value.
Well, why haven't we taken into account the third option that the Nizak, the Davar HaNizak is always the Nizak himself, and that everything he owns is just considered his estate?
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning on Monday. Isaac made this comment about, like, maybe it's...
Yeah, exactly. The land's not the Davar HaNizak, it's just that it contributes to his estate elsewise.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? It's like, that was like a... I think I threw that as like a possibility. Why don't we just say it's like the net worth of, let's think of it as like the net worth of the Nizak. So like if he had to sell all his assets now, how much would they all be bought for? But no one suggests that, right? No one says that Shaman Al Yidei Davar Acher is like, what's the difference in value to his net worth?
Well, that could potentially be so small. We don't even want to be Shaman Al
Yidei. Right, so maybe it's just too much. Maybe that's like too much of a discount.
Let's construct the case was very clear where the net gain to his worth has nothing to do with the damage. Like, let's say, he raises animals, and those animals regularly eat some of his fruit and hurt their stomach, and he has to pay medical bills.
All right.
So by destroying the fruit, you have to pay some money for medical bills of the animals.
Yeah, sure. Well, all these cases, suppose I'm mazik you, but the supply and demand curve is such that the amount of produce that I destroy is like offset, or maybe even like is less than the amount of gains, right? In the price inflation.
Yeah,
something like that. Right?
Yeah, but if you can totally separate the benefit from the NASDAQ, then you become conscious for whether or not the
yeah, 100%. Right. The thing is, you don't, and you can even say in a case like this. So, to tour, suppose it's just Shaman al Gav Hasada.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to say it's a person's whole net worth, but it's not the fallow value. What if it's like a supply and demand curve value?
Yeah, also.
Right. So, you might say that if the value of the field goes up because of the Mazik's damage, then arguably there's no Tesh limit. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's consistent with the Rush's idea, right? So,
Is there any Makar idea that Shuma might involve more than just a Shuma of whatever it sounds?
Well, this is right. We're trying to figure out, well, what's the scope, right?
But at the end of it, it's still, like you're saying, it still could easily be phrased with whatever it is
on. Yeah. So again, so it depends on the different views, right?
Yeah.
If you take a second side of the Chazon Yechezkel, we're trying to figure out the Devar Nisa.
Okay.
The other way of looking at it is that we don't really know. And I think you're right that we could say maybe the agnosticism is such that we don't even know whether the Devarat Nizak is like the atoms that were destroyed, like the closest like unit that we have like a word for, right? Or like the closest unit that's actually sold in the market. Or like maybe it's the net worth of the Nizak himself.
Yeah.
And so maybe Shama Desaba Akha is just like trying to figure out like a procedure for adjudicating between like those like many different possibilities.
Yeah,
I understand. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
If we want a
medium
for mental, we need to end soon.
Yeah.
Because someone has to go.
Okay, so give me a few more minutes and I'll wrap up.
Literally like one or two more minutes.
Just
forget about it before we forget about it.
Yeah, we can do
streets.
Can people dive in separately or?
We can dive separately.
Well, I want to cover more ground because I feel like we're staying on these tickets for too long.
I feel like Minfa's late enough. It's not so hard for us to get a minion
now. Yeah, you got a Minfa, you're in Avela, so you really need a minion. Are you going to be able to get a minion later?
I feel pretty confident in a minion.
Okay. Great. So we'll go for a few more minutes. Can we go for 10 minutes? That's fine. Yeah? Yeah, or if anyone's burnt out, we can stop and
hard
we'll
ten.
On.
Hard 10.
What?
Hard
10.
Sharp 10.
Hard 10.
Okay.
I was going to say 7.
So, let's go to 250 then. We can dive in at 250 if everyone wants to.
No, so
who has
to leave by then?
Who has to leave?
I didn't leave class.
Or just by 250 it's fine.
Okay. So, I want to make another important point. So if we look at the Chazanish, we'll come back to Chazanish in a second. So the Chazanish, I think, just takes a stand. It's very important. Machlokas, Rashi, and Yashu Shlomo. So when we say Shamin al Yidei Sadeh, it's not clear what Shaman al Yidei Sadeh means even. I think we've all been assuming that it means we figure out the value of the real property together with the produce. Right? If I were to sell the real property together with the produce, how much would I get for it? Right? That's the implication that Rashi gives off. Kama haisa yafa hakarka limacher kishehi im hashakas. Right, so like, how much is the field worth now with the destroyed produce, versus how much was it worth with the mature, with the undestroyed produce? Yashu Shlomo thinks that's wrong. He thinks the real shuma is kama haisa shama sadeh zu'ata limkor l'peiros seha, just for the produce value of the field. We're never actually selling the peiros agav hakarka. We're just trying to figure out, were I to sell the entire produce of the field, how much would it be worth? Everybody see that? And he says, of course it's got to be that way, because, of course, Rashi's position that thinks it's like you're selling the whole field. He says, we won't hear a cloud. If can Yafsid have these, like, give us or me die. It's crazy to think that you damage a few apples in my sadeh, and now we figure out like the difference in the real property sale with or without those two apples. So suppose like the real property is worth $100,000. Suppose each apple is worth $1. So you tell like a buyer, well, how much would you like discount the $100,000 sale for like not getting those two apples? And arguably they'll say nothing, right? rioters. So the Amish Shlomo thinks that's crazy. Rather, we must be talking about a case where the Sada contains 1,000 apples. I can get about X amount for 1,000 apples. How much do I discount that? Discount that for getting 998 apples. And that's, I think, closer to the Talmud, Tosas Talmud Rabbeinu Tam view, that like, yeah, we're just viewing like the payros as a bundle. All right? It's not about the ontology of like, is the tvua part of the sadeh? Is it not part of the sadeh? It's just like, what's the most appropriate unit to bundle together in determining losses? All right, so I think that...
It's one step farther, though, right? Because he, like, the Yom Tov Shoah would make the distinction between fully formed fruit and not fully formed fruit, right?
He says Shaman Kamahisa Shabbat Sanzat Kishi Yin Ruby is Bashla Peros called Sarfa.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying Rabbeinu Tam made it right, he made a difference, but it made
Oh yes, correct.
Yeah.
Correct, he did.
He wouldn't do that. He was right, because the Sada is not even a factor here.
Right.
But the Gemara makes that distinction.
Yeah. So how would he not accept
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay, so
so, he might say there's a way to read the Gemara that's only talking about like a Dvarim Chashuvim or something. Like maybe it's like those special Tamarim or Gifanim that have Chashivas Bifnei Atzmam. But I don't think the Gemara just enough mostly buts there. It doesn't talk about like what if it's just like Shachas or something that, you know, even if it's not Yonig Menakarka, does it have like independent status? We could double check, but I think that might be a way that he would. Or he'll say that if he wants to bite that bullet, he could say, well, look, when it's yonik manasadeh, it's like sold as a bundle.
Right.
But like afterwards, you could repackage it in any way or something. But I think this makes a lot of sense, right? It makes a lot of sense to think that it's not the agav, the real property value. It's just the relative to where, if you were selling the whole tvuas asada together value. And I think it cuts anchor from the conception that we're worried about, like, what's the davar hanizak? Like, are payrolls ontologically connected with the sada itself? Yom Tov Shlomo has a sick raya for this.
And you remind us of your youth.
It's a very sharp raya over here. So he says, look.
Is it dope?
So he says,
Sick is good.
So he says, look. The Rush and the Tour think that you give him a discount for the kechesh hakarka, right? The mazik gets a discount for the benefit he confers to the fallow value of the land. But he says, were it to be the case that you're evaluating the value of, like, the resale value of the karka, what?
That wouldn't be a separate consideration.
Yeah, it would automatically be factored in. So what does it mean that you're giving him a discount for the kechesh value? Pretty intriguing proof, right? I mean, yeah, it's something you're saying, well, look, maybe they're just, like, different.
Right. Right?
Maybe, like, there's a different benefit gained by leaving your sada fallow, and that's, like, a different amount than, like, if someone's buying the whole thing. How much would, like, is it worth to them that it has a fallow value? Like, maybe it doesn't factor into the resale value, maybe it just factors into, like, the use value or something. But I think it's a clever riot, right? Things that if you're getting a discount for the kechesh, then it can't be that you're evaluating it for the real property worth. And I think there's a bit of a paradox here, because if it's just the resale value of the payros, it seems strange to me that you should get a discount for the kechesh, which is related to the sada. Right? It's like almost that benefit is totally external to the damage that's caused. So I think this could really go both ways.
Can you explain that second point?
The second thought is that it seems strange to me that you should get a discount for the kechesh value if that's totally distinct from the nezek that's caused. The nezek is caused to the peros, so I have to compensate you for the peros. And then there's a separate benefit that I conferred to your sada, which has nothing to do with damage. So it's not obvious that I should be able to recoup that benefit as part of my my liability for the payros. There's like two separate ayudim. So then I think you have to say Isaac's point that, oh, it's just a yorid l'tov sada shel chaver mashpicho. Like, I conferred this external benefit, and we're lumping them together as a bundle for like convenience reasons. But if not, then like your liability for damages is less because of a separate benefit conferred, right? Say, I owe you $1,000, and you happen to owe me separately $100 for something else. That's like the picture that would emerge. Okay, so we'll pick up on. So we'll pick up next week.
Sunday morning.
You want to do a Sunday? Okay, we'll pick up next week with the further discussions here about exactly about the scope of this halakha and some further nafkamina and how we understand it. All right?
All right.
I think.